אפשר לחבות, בבקשה.
כן, הוא ניזל קדישן
לזה. כן, נכון. כן, כן, סודים את זה. Welcome to another meeting of our Institute for Contemporary Affairs at the Jerusalem Center for Public Affairs. I think the timing of today's lecture couldn't be better, that we have the fortune of having with us a Major General Reserves Yom Tov Samia, who has years of experience not only being a former Southern Command commander for the Southern Command of the Israeli for the IDF, between 97 and 2001, but also has years of experience in the Taba and Cairo talks, in the negotiations on the implementation of the Oslo agreements, and therefore has been both on the military side and the diplomatic side. Many of you have probably recognized that the issue of weapons smuggling into the Gaza Strip has become far more acute on the policy agenda of Israel, and certainly came up in yesterday's discussions between President Mubarak and Prime Minister Olmert. And as Israel now plans to head out to Annapolis to see about how it can implement further stages of the peace process, the question of the involvement of Arab states like Egypt will certainly be high on the agenda. Major General Yom Tov Samia will be speaking about weapons smuggling from Egypt to Gaza, what Egypt and Israel can do. And I think the material you'll see will also involve some discussion of the magnitude of the problem, which is no longer just small weaponry, but has gotten to a scale that is becoming a regional problem. So let me turn the floor over to Major General Yom Tov Samia. Thank you.
Well, good morning. Thanks for having me here today. What, O Lord, I'll express here is my personal opinion. Doesn't belong to any public institute or office, doesn't deal with my actual reserve service or any other knowledge. So if you have someone to blame, it's only me or us that would see at the end. I prefer questions and answer at the end, unless there is something not clear from the slides. I don't have problem to answer during. Doesn't cut any my any thinking line, since many people thought that I'm not thinking, so there's no problem of thinking line. So please feel comfortable if something not clear from the slides. I'll be very happy to answer, but the heavy questions I'll prefer at the end. That's from the Gashash. What do we have here? I'll speak a little bit about the shopping list. Then I'll speak about two syndromes that we are facing during, I can say, the last 50 years, and some conclusions and questions and answers. Is it just something wrong or... No. You didn't see any slides in now? You're so quiet people. It works. Like Rega. Huh?
It's an FN with
Arma. No, no, it's a Lodolek. Umcha Lodolek. It's not me. Umcha Lodolek.
עכשיו עוד דרך.
רגע, תן לו.
יש לו.
הוא
נחבא כי לא נגענו בו.
So I'm on my third slide. So I have, just to understand another angle of my talks right now, I'm 7 years out of the regular service. Since then, I'm a businessman. I was running for 3 years the largest engineering and project company in Israel, the Baran Group. Then I was 3 years with my own consulting company and real estate, especially out of Israel, of course. Who can build in Israel? Only the big sharks. And during the last 2 years, I fall in love in renewable energy. And I'm dealing only with renewable energy, especially biofuels, first and second generation, energy from biomass, and solar systems. I'm doing this for the Israel Corporation. And I'm trying to do something for our next generation, since I'm not sure we are doing well for this generation. You will see it. You will probably understand it from my words later on. Just during the last year, about less than 12 months, we faced more than 1,500 events along the border with Egypt. More than 100 infiltrators. And most of them, of course, not peacemakers. We are talking about terrorists running from side to side, and more than 3,000 Africans, which is a different subject. It's not connected to this subject, but just to show you how this border is open and not controlled by any side, at least not from the Egyptian side. And those are numbers that we know, those are numbers that I collect from public, like newspaper, news, and other resources. Taking something more seriously and more accurate for the situation, more than 130 tunnels between the Egyptian Rafah and the Palestinian Rafah. Those are tunnels that the Israeli side declares that they know about it. So you can imagine that there are at least the same amount that we don't know about them. And those tunnels used specially for goods purposes, small weapons. Since the Rafah passage, or international Rafah passage, I don't know if still can call it international passage, Rafah passage, most of the goods or the weapons can be transferred by trucks, by cars, so I'm not sure. I really don't understand why they need the tunnels, especially for things that they like us not see, or something like this. Here is the shopping list. The hearing that yesterday someone shouting on our prime minister giving the Palestinians 1,000 of rifles makes just jokes beside these numbers. More than 30,000 of rifles during 2 years. That's more than the Palestinian police were allowed to bring with them on the Oslo Agreement. More than 6 million rounds, ammunition rounds. And that's the most. Now we start with the most dangerous things. More than 230 tons of explosive stuff. And I'm not talking about stuff that you can make from it, explosive, like fertilizers or other things. I'm talking about official explosive like TNT and more. And when I'm saying like TNT and more, it means also XOL or other explosive stuff, which the damage is sometimes two or three times than regular TNT. Also C4, yeah. At the end of the day, we believe that C4 is there as well. It's not... Pistols, who counts pistols? So I stopped counting from 2000. It's the beginning of 2007. Doesn't have any meaning. Now again, the next level of weapon is missiles and rockets. And I'm talking about anti-aircraft missiles, anti-tank missiles, more than 160 during 2006, and about the same numbers during 2007. Mortars, some dozens of mortars, which they didn't use yet, except I think one or two times that it was sure was shot by mortars. In the southern part of Gaza, but those are the weapon that we will face on the next round. Dozens of launchers, especially RPGs and A4 and others, again especially for anti-tank weapons and the. I'll talk about it on the conclusion. How we think, or how I think, the next round in the Gaza Strip will be look like. More than will be look more the like Lebanon, not like we faced in Hamat Magen in Judah and Samaria, or in other rounds in Gaza in the past. We need some goods, of course. You can't just smuggle a weapon. Part of the lubrication of the system is running the goods. You can see the number by yourself. It's drugs, heavy drugs. I don't know if there are light drugs, but some people call them light, marijuana and others. Huh? So this is the goods. Just the upper row is 1 year, the first year, and the second row is the second year. I'm talking only during the last 2 years. Okay, that's just a shopping list and the background of my main 2 points that I like to raise here. I think we suffer from what I call the last step syndrome. And if you start from 1967, we all agree it was a great victory, but the implementation of that victory in order to solve real problems in the Middle East, none of the sides took it seriously. And when we did it, we just... put settlements everywhere without any system, without any future thinking, without any alone program or any just as we say in Hebrew, under every tree and under every fresh tree, I've said from the Bible, wherever we found empty hill or tree or something from our historical or from the Bible, we have a settlement without any system, not looking together or by ourselves, except some small steps. If you remember Moshe Dayan's steps during the first few months, like the cleaning of the area of the Western Wall in Jerusalem and the passages on the bridges on the Jordan River. Some small steps which can just show us that if we were more looking to our future or to the Palestinian future, both sides could find other solutions during the first year after the Six-Day War. Then going to 1982, Arafat plus 10,000 terrorists were on the same vessel. And I'm asking, where the hell is the last missile? Can you imagine how the Middle East could look from 1982 without Arafat and his most terrorist group? I'm sure it was different. The Oslo Agreement, I think the Oslo idea was a very, very smart idea of both sides. Very encourageable step. Let's sit on the same table. Let's push forward the main five issues: borders, water, armies, settlements, etc. Let's be neighbors for 5-10 years, and then we'll discuss it one by one and find mutual solutions. But the implementation of this idea was very bad from both sides. And whenever we saw Arafat doing something else from our side, especially the left flanks in our side, used to say, it's nothing. That's why you think that 6 pieces of RPG in Arafat trunk should bother you? Is that a trait? I remember I was just Brigadier General these days, and when I was giving some intelligence paper talking about smuggling of RPGs or weapon in Arafat convoy or in other officials from the Palestinian Authority, the next question: do you think it's a threat on the state of Israel? Stupid question. 6 RPGs launchers, it's not a threat on the Israeli state. But that's what I answer. It will destroy your genius agreement. That's it. Because he thinks something else, and we are thinking something else. 1985. The pulling out from Lebanon, the one-sided step from Lebanon on May 2000. Again, each leader can do one-sided step. That's the duty of leaders. But when you do a one-sided step without the punchline of that step, it means you continue playing with the same rules. For the other side, it is not one-sided step. It is running away from Lebanon. It is giving up on the situation. And I had a big argument with Ehud Barak those days during the first months of the year of 2000, saying, okay, I was that time already Major General, Commander of the Southern Command, so I was in the executive management of the army somehow. And I ask, okay, if we are going to pull out from Lebanon as a one side without any agreement, let's change the rules. We cannot play tennis with a football rules. If you play tennis with a tennis rules. So I was asked, what are your proposals for rules, for the new rules? It was very clear for me. Each Hezbollah activator who crossed the Litani River to the south is executed to death. No Hezbollah down or south of the Litani River. Rule number one. Rule number two, first round, first shot on any settlements in Israel or any Israeli patrol from the Hezbollah, from the Lebanese side, we within 6 hours should destroy all the Syrian infrastructure in Lebanon. Syrian were there. I mean, all the army in Lebanon within 6 hours. We need a plan. We call what we call a drawer plan. Just pull the drawer out in 6 hours, like we know how to do when we call to destroy all the Syrian infrastructure in Lebanon. And step number three, the first Katyusha on any settlements of Israel, all the civilian infrastructure in Lebanon should be destroyed. And declare those three new rules in any newspaper, in any on any channel on TV in Lebanon. And I'm not sure we would use more than first one. But we pulled out, we ran away from Lebanon on May 2000, and we continue dealing with the same rules like we are invisible. We were not on the border of Lebanon from May 2000 till July 2005. The only event in the world that I know, and I think I know some history, there was not a situation that a terrorist flank or terrorist organization is sitting along an international border in strong points, in OPs, with his flags. So you can see him every day, and he has a switch or a button. He pushed the button, he became a terrorist flank, he pushed the button again, he's an army, regular army. And I remember the first time I was driving on the border of Lebanon after the pullout from Lebanon. It was, I think, June, a month after, or maybe less. I went to visit my soldiers from the Givati Brigade who were serving in Lebanon, on the border of Lebanon, and I was driving with one of the company's commander on the Lebanese border. And I wasn't aware that the Hezbollah are on the fence. Believe me, on the first 5 minutes, I was in shock. A company commander, lieutenant, stopped the car and said, "Dear General, are you okay? You sure you're okay?" I said, "Yeah, I'm okay. I need to drink some water and take me out from here." He said, "Why, are you afraid from something?" I said, "No, I'm not afraid. I'm afraid from us. Because the only situation that I trained you as a company commander to see an eye of a terrorist is either in jail or after you killed him. I don't know any other situation of looking into the eyes of terrorists. Or he is in jail or he is dead. Otherwise, you're going to be dead." It's needless to say that during June I took my decision to leave the army a few months after that. And then again, the disengagement from Gaza Strip. I don't have any argument on leaders' decision to evacuate from Gaza, with the settlements, with the army, whatever. That's leaders' job to do further steps to find a solution. But again, where is the punchline? We are leaving the Gaza Strip without changing any rule of the game. Even we start to use a light rules than we used when we were inside. I saw that on the list that are some or some many people here from Europe, from Australia, from anywhere. Can you imagine Sderot in the, let's say, like take small town east of Netherlands? I don't remember the name. I was there once in a football game, just 500 meters from the border with Germany, suffering every day just from 10 Qassams. Every day. It's become already in Sderot, we have 7 years old kids who knows only the Qassam situation. They never felt something else. And I was begging Ariel Sharon and his people, please put on the table what is the punchline of this disengagement. What are the new rules for tomorrow? Why we are leaving Philadelphia? Why is it not clear what's going to be in Philadelphia the day after? Philadelphia, to whom doesn't know, is not Philadelphia, United States, is the border between the Egyptian Rafah and the Palestinian Rafah. No punchline, and this is the result. So this syndrome of the last step bring us to wherever we are now. The second point I like to touch is the syndrome of they will do it for us. It's okay, they will do it for us. And one of the critical uses of this syndrome was in the Tomb of Joseph, October 4, 2000. It was Wednesday, between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippurim. I can say, hey, Betishrei, it was easier than saying October 4. But they will do it for us. They will evacuate angel, soldier for us. And those who know the history of the IDF knows exactly what kind of red line we cross and we crossed in this situation. Personally, I took this event very seriously. The day after, I put my keys on the table and asked to leave the army immediately on Thursday night, the day after, when I just realized exactly what happened there, because I was still busy with my flag, with my area. And I was waiting till 6 o'clock evening for an answer. Or we're going to pull out from the tomb of Joseph in Shechem, or we are going to put there enough forces in order to evacuate any injured soldier without, they will do it for us. And the decision was taken the same night that we're going to pull out from this tomb. So I remained in the army for more 2 months. I stayed with my plan. Then on the same thinking, the Egyptian border, counting on the Egyptian police that they will do the job for us. Even before the summer of 2005. I had a meeting a few years ago with one of my Egyptian colleagues. And this is off record, please. I don't like to anyone now try to imagine who was this guy. But he was about my rank. And we had a coffee in his spot in the Egyptian side. You know, good coffee and nargila and baklava and good spirit. And we spoke Arabic, a little bit Arabic Egyptian, which I try to find out if I can do it in his nice words. And I just asked him, "Can't you do it? Please, just tell me no. Can you avoid any smuggling or infiltration from the Egyptian side to the Palestinian side?" I'm talking before summer of 2005, before the year of 2000, okay? So it's far away behind this period. And he said, "Yes, I can do it. Why not?" So I asked him, "What the hell you need? You have everything here. What the hell you need in order to do it?" You know what he said? One word: an order. "I just need a clear order that this is my mission." So I told him, "You rest my case. That's it. There is no any clear order to the Egyptians, police or army or whoever they are there, to avoid any infiltrations or smuggling from Sinai to the Gaza Strip. If they will have a clear order and the tools that they need, they will do it." We use the same, "They will do it for us in Lebanon with the Shiite against the Christian, and then with the Hamas against the Fatah in Judah and Samaria." And we create the Hamas, if you don't remember. Somehow we help the creation of Hamas during the 80s. So with those two syndromes, we came to these conclusions. The Egyptian activity deals only with the surface of the problem, or not with the infrastructure. And they can do it. If the Egyptian side will declare on 3 kilometers of a military zone between the Philadelphia road, all inside Sinai for 3 kilometers as a military zone, they will do it. I'm sure they can do it. 3 kilometers, not 3 meters, not 30 meters, 3 kilometers of military zone. By the way, it's a cleanup area, no residence, at least not official residence, only army camps or police camps, whatever they need for this job, and they can do it. They are not dealing with the infrastructure in Sinai. They are dealing only on the surface, visible donkeys and small jeeps and Subarus, whatever they are using. The terrorist flanks in groups in Gaza, especially the Hamas, of course, include the Jihad Islamics and the other, are looking only on the next war of Israel. They are preparing themselves not to any other option. And the next round is unavoidable from my point of view. Whatever we are going to do, it's unavoidable, and every day, or the sooner is better for us, in other words. Regarding Philadelphia, we are almost late, because doing the job on Philadelphia today will be, of course, with a lot of casualties, more than a year ago or 2 years ago, or the more clever step to do the disengagement from Gaza, but to remain in Philadelphia. and control Philadelphia. I should remind you, the Oslo Agreement. The Oslo Agreement, again, we were, I was sitting those days with the most left flank side from our side. And any other right flanks from the Palestinian side. None of them talks those days regarding Philadelphia. The border between Egypt and Israel was the border from 1906. 100 years border. No one wanted changes. Even Begin and Sadat, Allah irhamah. None of them wanted to change this border. It's an international border. Furthermore, we agreed, both sides, that the only military zone. Look at the maps of Gaza and Jericho agreement that I draw by my hands on my 94 in Cairo. The only military zone is the Philadelphia area. And military zone, those in that agreement, is stronger than the settlements area. Because military zone is a military zone. Rules are very clear there. It's drawn in red strip, or pink. I'm not sure I had read that line, but I made it with one of my pink. Even in Oslo Agreement, none of the sides thought the Philadelphia can be in other situation than a military zone. So what's changed on summer of 2005? Just stupid consultants. That's it. I hope I rest my case. For further questions, I'm not sure I have answers for all your questions, since I don't have answer of all my questions.
Thank you, General Samia. I think we have time for questions. What I'm going to ask people to do is go to the microphone and identify yourself so we have it for the record, even if you know that we know you. Please, in the back.
Michael Zulus from the French TV, TF1.
Not France Doha.
No. We'll have some
only
question
those
afterwards.
Who knows the joke and
some question about that afterwards.
Huh? Adora, yeah.
Concerning the Oslo Agreement, you just said that the syndrome of they will do it for us. I'd like to remind you what Rabin said. We will fight terrorism without the High Court of Justice and without B'Tselem. I mean, the syndrome of they will do it for us is built in the Oslo Agreement. So you can't say on one side we have to go on the Oslo Agreement, on the other side criticize the syndrome of they will do it for us. It's built in the Oslo Agreement. Thank you.
There is a sense in Hebrew says, Ben Amar La'asa Ma'alach Tak Parsa. You are the only one who can translate it. It means, it's from the Bible or from the Pirkei Avot? Lamno? Okay. It means between words and doing something, the distance is from here to China. Something like this. So he says, so what? But when we start to implement the agreement the day after, against. The main question was, do you think it's a threat on the state of Israel? 5 rifles in the Mercedes of such and such? The answer is no. It's not a threat, but it's they will not do it for us.
Andy Friedman from the Australia-Israel Review. You laid out very clearly your suggestions for responding to aggressions from Lebanon after the pullout from Lebanon and from Gaza after the pullout from Gaza. What should Israel's reaction be? You also said that Egypt has made clear they have no intention of policing the border between between Israel and Egypt. What should Israel's response to that refusal be?
You want me to focus only on the Egyptian point, or also Lebanon and others?
My question is specifically about Israel, about Egypt.
Okay.
I'm interested to hear what you have to say on the other fronts as well.
Okay, let me be clear. First of all, the peace between Egypt and Israel is a strategic asset for both sides. None of the countries of those two countries can or should to give up on this peace, whatever it is, cold, non-warm. There is no bad peace. Peace is a peace. So with all what I've said till now, I must say very clear that the peace with Egypt is a strategic asset for Israel as well as for Egypt. I cannot imagine our situation today without a peace with Egypt during the last 30 years since the visit. Yeah, yesterday, 30 years. I cannot imagine our situation without that peace. Or both sides, by the way. Also, the Egyptian situation was far away from being what they are today. So just imagine both sides holding 4 divisions from our side, 6 or 8 divisions from their side, along the border, either in the canal or somewhere in Mitle and GD, or wherever it was, for the last 30 years. It's a different game. I'm sure that with that situation, Oslo was not even on the drawing papers. Maybe it's good, I don't know. But again, both sides should do all their efforts in order to keep this peace. I think in this case, the Egyptian should make a very clear steps regarding this situation. With their international border.
What leverage does Israel have to encourage or even insist Egypt undertake those efforts? To issue the order to the army units along the border?
Tell you the truth, not much. I don't think they have that much. I'm claiming to the Egyptian in this case, not the Israelis.
Lenny Ben David from the Jerusalem Center. In your list of the shopping list, you list a Concorde missile. Can you tell me what that is? Tell us what that is. You also list Concorde.
It's an anti-tank missile.
Okay. Is it on the level of the RPG or?
No. It's missiles. RPG is a rocket.
So this is a guided missile? And
it's a guided missile 2,000 meters or
okay.
About it's a different game. It's okay. Not RPG.
And you listed a Grad. Is that what we know here in Israel as the Katyusha? What is its range?
Yeah.
What is its range? What cities are in within range? And have they been used?
18 to 20. And I think one or two of them were used to Ashkelon
this year,
yeah, or no, not Netivot, Ashkelon, south of Ashkelon. So anyway, it will cover Ashkelon, and it's the Grad that we know.
Can you put up the shopping list there?
In dollars or?
There we go. The Concorde, as we mentioned, is an anti-tank, Russian anti-tank missile.
Yeah.
You have, what's AC on the right?
It's anti-aircraft.
anti-aircraft missile. Is it SAM-7?
No, smaller. They have some things that I prefer not to talk about.
Okay.
Because I cannot say it's to the protocol, not to the protocol. That's why I put it in question mark.
Major General Dan Diger from the JCPA. Very briefly, there has been a debate in Israel about whether the rocket attacks from Gaza can be stopped and solved militarily. The other side of the debate says, no, it has to be done diplomatically and politically. From your point of view, how can the IDF or Israel stop the rocket fire from Gaza on Israel? And does that, when you said in your presentation another round is inevitable, does that mean a full ground operation against the Gaza Strip? Thank you.
Sorry, not giving you a full answer, since I'm not an advisor to the Hamas. At least I wasn't paid for it, and I will never be paid for it. I am still in a reserve service, and I cannot conclude in my answer all my opinion or my knowledge regarding what are the steps. The first order that we need as an army is a clear order from our leaders that this is the mission of the IDF. I'm not sure, as long as I know, as long as it was published, the IDF doesn't get a clear mission to stop the rockets, the Qassam rockets on Sderot. The only thing I can say that Philadelphia should be the first thing to do. And this time, to do Philadelphia, not by the meaning or by the saying they will do it for us. It means we should clear up the 3 kilometers from our side. Since the Egyptian doesn't do it, we should do it from our side. The cost will be very high for both sides, Israelis and Palestinians. But we don't have any other solution. Sorry for the half answer.
Linda Gradstein in the back. Exactly. Linda Gradstein from NPR. I have two questions, if I may. Do I understand you correctly as saying that Israel should reoccupy Philadelphia and should stay there long term? That's just a clarification first.
You're not listening to the radio, because I've saying these words for the last 7 years.
And should stay there and should maintain.
Forever.
Okay, that was the clarification. And may I ask you a question? I was in Gaza on Sunday, and I was surprised for the first time to hear people openly talking against Hamas in the wake of the rally, the big Fatah rally, and what happened there. And I was surprised that for the first time I felt that people are starting to blame Hamas as well as Israel for their sort of plight. Do you see any alternative to Hamas in Gaza? Do you see anything that Israel can or should be doing to encourage that?
It's an obstacle question. Because I'm saying it from the positive, from the positive thinking. If you remember one of the syndromes that I was talking about, that I don't like to see ourselves encourage any side in order to defeat the other side. What we should do is what is good for Israel. I remember I was interviewed by the radio the day after one of the new leaders in the Palestinian Authority was elected, I think, to the Ministry of Interior Defense, Abdelrazak Al-Yahya, a brilliant man. I was with him for 6 months in Cairo, and I was asked, is that good? Is that good nomination for Israel? I said, what the hell is a stupid question? He is the minister for the Palestinian Authority. So you should ask if this is good for the Palestinians, not for Israel. So from my point of view, we should do every step that serves Israel, not serves the Hamas today and the Fatah tomorrow, or the Fatah today and the Hamas tomorrow. And I'm very happy to hear from you that they start again to understand who is causing them most of the problems. As much as we squeeze them more, they will understand that more, maybe. I agree with you. It's not a mathematics. But I'm happy to hear that they start to realize that the Hamas caused them more problems, or at least like Israel.
But if I can follow up, I don't really see an alternative. In other words, there isn't. The Fatah leadership is gone. You've got these, I don't see, I felt a sort of general public dissatisfaction, but I don't see it leading to anything.
So we should occupy again Philadelphia forever, widened for 3 kilometers, destroyed all the Hamas infrastructure in the Gaza Strip. That will cause about 500 casualties. Or 5,000 casualties in the Palestinian side. Yeah, it's going to be a very heavy price for both sides.
You said 500 on the Israeli side?
No, I made a mistake. I would never say how many casualties in the Israeli side. 5,000, at least 5,000 casualties on the Palestinian side.
And then?
We cook it, both sides, we should eat it. And then maybe some other leadership will take place or will take any control on this piece of land. Fadal.
It's Dr. El Swaifi. I'm the counselor of the Embassy of Egypt in Israel. I feel that I have to respond to you in 20 to 50 minutes, but I'll try to be very brief, because I saw in your title that you have a doctor as well, beside being a general, and I think that you've based your whole argument on newspapers. And according to one Yemeni newspaper, Yemen is the richest country in the world. And so I'm not sure that you should be basing your argument on newspapers. You've been not in service for the last 7 years. And I tell you, please refer to your colleagues at Lauyu. You know General Dekel, and he will tell you exactly the right numbers, which is far, far from what you've stated.
More or less?
I'm talking serious here.
No, I'm talking seriously also. More or less that I stated.
General Dekel from Lauyu will tell you that the accomplishments on both sides, and not on one side only, is totally different than what was reflected here. Anyway.
What, regarding numbers?
Yes.
Of weapons?
Yes. And especially on accomplishments on both sides. For instance, you've never mentioned the tunnels that were discovered by Egypt. Yesterday, it was approved by your prime minister, by Mr. Olmert, that 236 tunnels were discovered from the Egyptian side by the Egyptian troops. A couple of weeks ago, when 6 tunnels were discovered in Israel and destroyed, please ask again General Dekel, and he will tell you that the 6 tunnels were discovered from the Egyptian side and destroyed from the Egyptian side and then from the Israeli side. Anyway, I don't want to get into this argument because I don't think that the time is appropriate. General Dekel is the head of Lauyu, which is like the unit that coordinates between Egypt and Israel concerning those matters. And I was, part of the Ministry of Foreign Affairs of Egypt, member of this committee for the last 3 years, and I know the exact figures. Anyway, I think that the timing of such a narrative is inappropriate. We've been hearing such a narrative for the last year from politicians, generals, etc., and even from some Israeli officials. This narrative was not only dismissed by us, it was dismissed by the Prime Minister of Israel. Because yesterday, we've agreed to enhance coordination in that regard. Enhancing coordination means three things. First, that one, each side does not believe in the ill intentions of the other side, or else you would not intensify coordination. Second, that each side does not think that the other side is lacking will, or else you would not coordinate. That what they've agreed to is to enhance a mechanism. So they've identified the problem as a management problem, not an ill intention problem or a lack of will problem, just a management problem. That's the Prime Minister of Israel. And this is the narrative that we abide to and think is appropriate, correct. And if you've mentioned history, anybody knowing the history of the region would know that the affiliation, the ideological platform of Hamas, Egypt, regional affiliation and the ideological platform, Egypt would be the last country, especially the Egyptian government, would be the last government in the world would support Hamas. Thirdly, I want just to mention that I really did like your name, as it sounds very optimistic, as my knowledge of Hebrew is so small, but I knew that Yom Tov is a good day, good and day. This is very optimistic. And I think that you were not optimistic at all in your presentation. I think it was very pessimistic, especially when now everybody is looking forward for a very optimistic incident that will be taking days a few that will be taking place a few days from today. Let's now concentrate on the positive aspects. I came here today not to actually listen to the narrative that was dismissed by the Israeli government. I came today because I felt that the title is how can we coordinate, and this was the title that you've never mentioned actually in your presentation, how can we coordinate in solving the problem. Let's coordinate, let's stick to the positive aspects. The region needs people who emphasize on the positive aspects and to dismiss such not only baseless, but in pragmatic narratives. Thank you.
I just want to intervene for 1 minute. One of the things we try and do is we don't support this narrative or that narrative. What we try and do is expose.
Well, no, but there's was dismissed by both sides now. So no other narrative. Well, this here, was 1 week ago.
No. Regardless of the position of the government of Israel, there are many other versions of events. And we try and present them, and we try and discuss them. And we may disagree with our own prime minister. In fact, there are a lot of people who do. But we will examine these issues, and only by a frank exchange, by the way, between the Israeli side and the Egyptian side, whether we are sitting in an NGO or you're sitting in the government, can you get to the bottom, and can you strengthen the relationship ultimately? If people keep inside their frustrations, then the relationship is hurt ultimately. So hopefully, by the frank exchange of information, we can get to a better result. But we have another view of, not we as a center, this is General Yom Tov Sami's view. There are other views out there, and they're very important to hear, and sometimes it just doesn't work with what the Prime Minister may be saying, but we think it's important to discuss.
Can I respond?
Please, please, please.
I think definitely the debate is very positive. And for the relations between Egypt and Israel, we have to be frank. But the timing of such...
Use the microphone.
The microphone, please.
Use the microphone. Rewind.
I think frankness between our two countries is very important. But the timing of concentrating on the positive or the negative aspect is very important as well. Let us, starting yesterday, concentrate on the positive aspects. That's what we need in the coming 6 to 1 year, the whole region.
Okay.
I'm not here to say if I'm optimistic or pessimistic. I'm just realistic. That's it. This one. Second, the difference between me and you, I'm a civilian free man, businessman, I'm going back to my office to work for my salary and my and our next generation. And you are you're serving your government.
People.
It's no, you're serving your government first of all, or your people, whatever. So it's just natural that we think different, and we can speak different. And that's more precisely, we can speak different. I'm sure that when I'll present my government, I will speak. I hope not that difference between my thought and my words, since my reputation during the last 53 years, even if in my neighborhood that I grow up, that usually or most of my times I'm saying what I'm thinking. So the difference between me and you, I can say exactly what I think. I'm not sure that any service man can do it. It's nature. I'm not blaming you or any other serviceman. Then the third point is creating a mechanism. I'm tired from creating mechanism. You know how many mechanisms I'm creating with the Egyptians, with the Palestinians, with the Lebanese, with the Israelis? Mechanism without fuel, green fuel from today at least, without clear order, it's just wasting of time and money and words. Because if you create a mechanism in both sides and you are not appointing exactly what you want from them, it's like what we say in Hebrew. What is a camel? A camel is a mechanism between a committee who try to find a new horse. That's it. So I'm tired from mechanism. And they can put hundreds of committees and mechanisms and decals and Yom Tovs and Bashir and whatever names will be there. When the mechanism or the committee doesn't have a clear order, like my colleagues told me, I just need a clear order that this is my job.
That's why he was dismissed.
Because he was a brave. Just because he was brave. And the fact, no, it was long question, so I have some more points, please. So mechanism without clear order is just waiting time and money and illusions for other people. The fact that the Egyptian discovered 230 tunnels may impress other people, not me. Because the tunnels of today, and I said it, it's useless. I don't know why they're still digging tunnels while they can cross by cars from both sides. But maybe they got used to work on tunnels, so they work on tunnels. Or maybe they are smuggling goods through the tunnels. They don't want the tourists took from them the gold and the hashish and whatever. So it doesn't impress me that much. You know what it says? If they want, they can. If they want to deal with the infrastructure, like they deal with the non-useless tunnels, they can do it. And I don't know what... My numbers are very close to the exact numbers. Not all of them from newspaper, believe me. Not this one who says that Yemen is a rich country.
What are the exact numbers?
More close to this. I can argue it with Dekel, with any others. Huh? Okay. try to find out what numbers are in the table of the bilaterals meetings and trilateral meetings. Okay. Again, all those who are sitting there are services, are service people of other sides. I'm realistic. This is the close numbers to the truth.
We have to remember, in many democracies, there isn't always agreement. We have times we see in the United States, the CIA says one thing, the DIA says something else. There are different numbers out there. We suspect that that's also the case in any of these discussions. Chaya Hershkovitz, our Director General.
I think that's almost an inevitable question on the eve of Annapolis. What, in your opinion, are the implications of what you told us here to any kind of arrangement for Judea and Samaria?
You're asking about Annapolis as a case, or what's the solution in Judea and Samaria? I'm not sure I catch your question. So what's the connection with Annapolis? Going to Annapolis is a wasting of 200 visas to the United States. That's, I can't see any leaders from, you know, just looking at the newspaper of today, 40 invitations were sent by email or by DHL, whatever they used, and RSPV, like, it's like invitation to a wedding or a bar mitzvah or something. Please RSPV that you are coming. I'm not expecting anything from Annapolis except this, the this or frustrations from all sides, and I just hope for both sides, for all sides, that it will be finished with a nice declarations and, but not real steps. If you want to, if two sides want to find a solution, they should close themselves in one room, not with 38 witnesses to witness their talks. So we need a small room in Be'er Sheva or in Sderot or in Ramallah or Rafah, wherever it is, with serious talks. Not Annapolis, is not. I believe the roadmap can be something to start with. But with our zigzag road, we are running away from the roadmap. We're going to other maps, to other roads. And I'm not sure that even the solution for Judah and Samaria and regarding comes from the roadmap can be implemented or seriously talk about these days.
I have time for the International Crisis Group. Your last report got a lot of attention.
Nick Pelham, International Crisis Group. General, I'm confused about how you say that the roads are open between Gaza and Egypt. Rafah has been closed for many, many months. When Gazans try and get out by sea, they're shot out. When they try and get out into Israel, infiltrators are killed. There isn't any access, there isn't any movement, there isn't any trade. And aren't the tunnels actually the product of the closure that has been imposed on Gaza? And if you want to see an end to an informal economy and greater monitoring and greater control, isn't the right thing to do to start having a formal economy again and ensuring that there can be normal trade, commerce, access and movement with Gaza?
If everything is closed, how they have those weapons there? Or those missiles and rockets. And they have them, believe me. I hope we will not have the day to to prove that by them, but they have it. I agree with one very important thing that you have said, that in this situation, the only mechanism which can start to deal with is economy. The economy channel and the security channel. In this situation, there is no place, continue with my previous answer, there is no place for any political steps, because it will be based on nothing, not on any security arrangements or ability to implement. Let's say that tomorrow both sides in Annapolis, and I will be very wrong and I'll declare that I was wrong, they're going to sign a wonderful agreement and a great solution. Who will implement it? The weak Fatah, who is doing ambushes to Malay Domim civilians? Or the strong Hamas, who are waiting for the day to fight Israel? Who will implement this great agreement from Annapolis, from the Palestinian side? You cannot create any or think of any solution, political solution, when you don't have the force to implement it. So the only thing we can do in both sides now is to enforce the economic channel and the security channel. And I don't agree with you that they cannot move. Who likes to move, who wants to move, can move.
I think that's it for today. I want to thank everyone for coming. I want to thank General Yom Tov Samia for sharing with us his thoughts. You know, in a period where everyone is preparing diplomatic pronouncements in anticipation of Annapolis, there's a tendency to talk in diplomatic language, which means you don't say very much. And it is very refreshing to have General Yom Tov Samia say things straight out and hear a very clear view, which sometimes falls on one side of the political spectrum and sometimes on the other side of the political spectrum, but it's how he sees it. And I think that kind of frankness is what we need when we are looking at the complex problems we're facing. Thank you again.
Thank you very much.